Welcome to the Shir and Tagumim, Parshas Kiseitse. The last few minutes of last night's Shir, we started speaking about a pasuk early on in the Sedra. Perchof Beis Pasuk, Hey, lo yiach li gever al isha, lo yilbash gever simlas isha. Right, the pasuk on the surface, as we spoke about yesterday, prohibits cross-dressing. A woman is not allowed to wear kli gever, simple pshat, a man's clothing. And a man is not allowed to wear simlas isha, woman's clothing. Ki so avas Hashem lokecho kol osei eile. Because the abomination of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in other words, this is abominable before HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you engage in these kinds of acts. Why is cross-dressing abominable? I mean, okay, it's not a good idea. Why is it abominable? So Rashi elaborates over here that the purpose of cross-dressing is to ultimately lead to illicit activities. Shetehei dome le'ish. The woman is dressing up as a man in order to appear like a man, in order that she should seamlessly slip in among the men. Her interest is to engage in illicit activities. And later on in the same pasuk, Rashi writes, this cross-dressing which is prohibited by the Torah is something which is going to bring the person to engage in these illicit kind of encounters which we're worried about. Okay, so a person's not allowed to cross-dress. But it's interesting to note, as we spoke about a little bit right at the end of the shiur yesterday, that the Torah utilizes different terms in describing a man not wearing woman's clothing as opposed to a woman not wearing man's clothing. The woman is not allowed to have kli gever. The word kli is a very, very slippery term to translate. Kli literally means a utensil. It can be translated as an article of clothing, right? It also can be translated as a utensil of some sort. And then strikingly, when it describes how a man is not allowed to wear women's clothing, it uses the word simla. Simla also, a simla in modern day Hebrew is a dress. Why is the term kli gever used as opposed to simlas isha? If the point is just not to use not to wear the clothing of the opposite gender, so we should make the two words equivalent to one another. So Targum Onkelos over here seems to be addressing this issue. He writes in his translation, Lo yehei tikun zain de gvar al ita. The tikkun zayn of a man should not be on a woman. Now the word zayn is presumably related to the Hebrew word zayin or kli zayin. Kli zayin is a weapon. So literally, Onkelos seems to be saying the weapons of a man should not be worn by a woman. What is that a reference to? So the Gemara Nazir Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph quotes as follows: Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Minayin Shlo Teitze Isha Beklei Zayin LeMelchama. How do we know that a woman is not allowed to adorn herself with weapons to go out to war? Talmud Lomar Lo Yiyek LiGever Al Isha. He quotes our pasuk. So, in other words, according to Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov, the pasuk is specifically prohibiting a woman wearing weaponry, because weaponry is considered to be something that men wear. In other words, men go out to war, women don't go out to war, and the idea of walking around wearing a weapon, this maybe isn't our experience so much, but, you know, wearing a weapon can be defensive, wearing a weapon can also be a form of dressing up, you know, in other words, a soldier, you know, wears a ceremonial sword, you know, to mark the fact that he's a soldier. So that idea of wearing a weapon as a levush, as a malbush, as something that you wear, is uniquely restricted to men. women shouldn't wear that, right? So according to the, it would seem that the Targum Onkelos is referencing this position of Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov. Now, does he mean to say that the only thing that women are prohibited from wearing are weapons that are associated with men? So all of the subsequent Rishonim comment on this position, Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov, just one example is the Sefer HaChinuch. The Chinuch writes, Mikomakom lobo akosuv lahotzi mino iser sha'ar klei ho'ish. The Torah is not trying to say that the only thing that a woman can't wear is a sword or a weapon, you know, but if she wants to walk around in other kinds of men's clothes, that's fine. Ela shehizkir klei zayin kedugma lekelim hamiyuchadim leish she'ein isha ba'olam shemishtameshes bohem. Right? The example of weaponry is an example. It's a type of item which is uniquely worn by men, and women nowhere in the world wear them. It's interesting, that's just the language of the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch lived in the 1300s, right? So it was inconceivable in the 1300s that a woman would be a soldier, you know, and she would be wearing weapons. What's that?
Joan of Arc.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if he knew from Joan of Arc, right? But, you know, okay. The question is whether she actually went out to war. Actually, if you read the Navi, so she sends Barak ben Avinoam out to war, right? She's the brains behind the operation. But, you know, she sends Barak ben Avinoam out to war, right? So in other words, you know, the sword or the other kind of weapon is something that is so clearly a man's that a woman would never wear that. Right, but the same would be true of any other kind of garment, which, you know, is particularly masculine. A woman, you know, would not be able to wear that as well. So the question is, if that's true of any kind of kli, of any kind of garment which is particularly masculine, why then would the Torah single out the idea of a woman not wearing a weapon? Right, lo yehei tikun zain de gvar alita. Why should that be the case? I think perhaps the answer is that it's a little bit of a chiddush, a little bit of a novelty, to say that the woman is prohibited from wearing a sword, because one might argue that's not really a garment. Right, there's a discussion in Hilchos Shabbos whether, let's say, a soldier is allowed to wear an ornamental sword outside. You know, he's wearing the ornamental sword. Is that considered to be an article of clothing that he's allowed to wear outside and not violate the prohibition against hotzah? We know you're allowed to wear clothes outside, right? Nobody makes you take off your clothes to go into the Rishus HaRabim. But, you know, is wearing a sword considered to be wearing a garment? You could make the argument that that's not an article of clothing. That's something that you wear in addition to your clothing. The fact that the Torah says the woman can't wear the ornamental sword because those are, or any kind of weaponry, because those are associated with, you know, with men specifically, it's a man's garment, then leads us to say that kol shekein, certainly something which is an actual garment, not only a piece of weaponry which is worn on top of one's garments, certainly the prohibition against cross-dressing, you know, would apply to that. But in any case, the usage of the word kli gever, you know, a kli, an instrument, right, is used specifically by the Torah, according to the Targum Onkelos, so as to indicate not only an article of clothing, but even an instrument, a weapon, you know, something which one might think at first glance is not an article of clothing, is an addition to an article of clothing. Even an instrument which is uniquely masculine, like a weapon, shouldn't be worn by a woman. Yeah.
Maybe I quote it wrong, but I think I once heard that Don Yitzchak Barbanel, he was very high, the treasurer of the king, and that, you know, whether or not he was allowed to appear on Shabbos wearing a sword, whether that's is a or is it just an ornament?
Right. So I'm not familiar with the story about the Abarbanel. The question of whether you can wear a sword outside into the Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos is actually Machlokas HaTanoim, you know, in the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos. And interestingly, the one who prohibits it says, no, it can't be an article of clothing, because we look forward to a time where nobody's going to carry swords anymore. You know, as The Isaiah wall has it, right? It's a Beferisha Isaiah wall. Yeah. I think it's also a Beferisha Pasuk in Isaiah, in Yeshaya, right? That they should beat their swords into plowshares, you know, the whole thing. So we're looking forward to a time where, you know, a guy walks around with a sword and people say, what is that? What's that plowshare that you have hanging from your belt, right?
And it's really surprising that
yeah.
with all this discussion you have, I don't know why, but the first thing that came to mind was the Kli Yochar. So I look out for that.
Right, Kli Yochar is a precious instrument, right? But I don't know if that was a weaponry, you know. It's,
well, I mean, you shouldn't. But then the question is, why it says Lo Yeh? She shouldn't have Torah, or whatever.
No. So what's the question?
I don't know. No, I'm saying you're describing weapons, and you would think that Kli, you know, actually refers to something like Kli Yochar. Is he not talking about the Torah? He's talking about, you know, the
safer Kli Yochar. Right, so Kli again literally translates as a precious instrument.
So
you know,
is that the Torah?
Yeah, but what would that mean in this context? You know, the Kli of a Gever shouldn't be on a... What would that mean?
I don't know, Lo Yeh, it's
right.
I'm not sure, but okay. I would think that was the first thing that would come to mind. You were asking me about Kli rather than a weapon.
Right. Okay. I hear. So again, that's the first part of the pasuk, right? So that's the Targum Onkelos right here is introducing this idea that again he doesn't, in his terse approach, he doesn't say I'm saying what I'm saying in order to address the fact that the Torah uses the word Kli as opposed to Beged. I mean, we would think, you know, when we talk about this concept in halacha, we talk about Beged Ish. Torah never uses the word beged, right? So the kli of a gever, the weapon of a man, even the weapon of a man, shouldn't be on a woman. And it's interesting to note, if one takes a look in the Sefer Achinuch, in mitzvah Tav Kuf Mem Beis, when the Sefer Achinuch discusses this mitzvah, the Sefer Achinuch actually quotes the Targum Onkelos, right, as a source for this idea that the iser of beged ish for a woman includes not only begodim, not only articles of clothing, but even things like weapons, which on the surface you would think are, you know, are something distinct from clothing. Yeah.
The Kli maybe just enough, and it was told us, anything that is a purely a manly thing.
Right.
And perhaps this is connected up anything that is manly, the woman should not have. And the men should not have the dressing. The woman's thing of grinding meat, thing, whatever she does in Asia's style, a man is allowed to do that. It doesn't say that. But what's the end of the pasuk? He saw us Hashem on the path. Because what happens is we know from the source of Shem, Achitzonius Morzitz of Phoenix. If she dresses like a man, she becomes like that, she's destroyed. It's a Toleba. Hashem said, I created you a woman. I created you a man. If you put the outside, what influences?
Right. Okay, no, I hear. So that's part one of the pasuk. The lo yilbash gever simlas isha. Again, we said the term simla is striking, right? Again, why not beged isha? Lo yilbash gever beged isha. See, the Targum Onkelos writes, v'lo yitaken gevar b'tikune ita. A man should not be misaking himself, literally fix himself up, or adorn himself with the adornments of a woman. So what does that mean? So here too, the Gemara in Nazir, which we quoted before, Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov says that lo yilbash gever simlas isha means shlo yisaken ish b'tikuna isha. Uses the exact same language, basically just in Hebrew, that the Targum uses in Aramaic. A man should not adorn himself with the adornments of a woman. So what does that mean? So again, here the Sefer HaChinuch as well explains, beged isha for a man is not just a matter of clothing, it could be a matter of makeup. You know, a man decides that he's going to put on makeup. Now, you'll say, okay, that's not beged, that's not clothing. Okay, but any attempt for the man to portray himself as a woman, if he puts on lipstick, if he, puts on any other kind of adornment that would normally be identified, you know, with women. He puts, I don't have to go through all the things in the in the bathroom cabinet. You know, he puts on mascara. I don't know. You know, I don't even know what's in there. But you know, he puts on any of these kinds of adornments. They may not necessarily be beged. They're not necessarily clothing in the literal sense of the term, but they are tikune ita. They are the adornments of a woman, and as such, you know, are going to be prohibited by the pasuk. So the point of both halves of the pasuk, according to the Unkelus' translation, which is really based on Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov in the Gemara and Nazir, is that it's not really, it's inaccurate to speak of these prohibitions as beged ish and beged isha, because that would give the impression that the prohibitions are limited to clothing. Rather, it's a more expansive kind of prohibition. The man isn't supposed to portray himself as a woman. The woman is not supposed to portray herself as a man. And that goes, you know, to wearing weapons, that goes to wearing makeup and lipstick and anything else, even if it's not a beged, that would portray one as being a member of the opposite gender. That's the Targum Unkelus. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel takes this a number of steps further, and this here is a very, very fascinating Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, who kind of extends the idea of this pasuk even a little bit further. Writes the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Lo yahavion gulion ditzitzis utfilin, Dehinun tikune givar al ita. A woman should not have the tikune givar, those jewelry items which are associated with men, on her body. What are men's jewelry? Talis and tefillin. A woman, says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, should refrain from wearing talis and tefillin, because those constitute clay gever, they constitute the instruments of a man. So here, let me just explain for a second. So the Yonasan ben Uziel presumably is also being sensitive to the use of the word kli as opposed to beged. Again, beged is a shirt, beged is a pair of pants. You know, the fact that a woman can't wear a man's shirt, a man's pair of pants, okay, that we're going to see, that's almost taken for granted over here. But even kalim, in other words, other adornments or articles of jewelry that are uniquely masculine, should not be worn by a woman. What are articles of jewelry that are uniquely masculine? So says the Yonasan ben Uziel, talis and tefillin. Now, we know la halacha, talis and tefillin, or tzitzis and tefillin, are really two of the, I think, if not the only one, certainly among the only mitzvahs asei shazman grama, which women are discouraged from performing. Right? We know in general women are exempt from positive time-bound mitzvahs, but we also know in general that you know, it's considered meritorious for them to take them upon themselves if they want to do them. A woman doesn't have to sit in a sukkah, but it's considered to be meritorious for her to sit in a sukkah. She doesn't have to listen to shofar. She doesn't have to shakal alulav. But in all these cases, if she chooses to do these things, it's meritorious. And the minhag of Ashkenazim is that she could even make a bracha if she sits in the sukkah or shakals a lulav or whatnot. However, we know that the halacha strongly discourages, you know, women from taking on the extra mitzvahs of talis and tefillin that she's exempt from. With regard to tefillin, the Rama writes that if a woman says she wants to put on tefillin, mochin biyada, we protest again. I don't know what that means exactly, but we tell her she shouldn't. If she comes and asks a shayla, you know, we tell her she shouldn't be putting on the tefillin. There are many different explanations as to why she should not be putting on tefillin, not be wearing tzitzis, but the Yonasan ben Uziel over here gives a novel, unique reason for why she shouldn't be putting on talis and tefillin. It's a violation of this prohibition of kli gever. In other words, these are uniquely masculine types of adornments, and it would be a violation for the woman to be putting them on.
I heard that, sorry to interject, but that when they're talking about tefillin over here, they're talking about you wear them all day. Women.
Yeah, I mean,
that was many were supposed to wear them all day, and women surely could not wear them all day because they have to take care of the kids and you know, picking up babies or whatever.
Right.
And tzitzis is only on a baguette that has four corners, so you can't really. It's not that it's not permitted to
wear.
Women just don't wear four cornered garters.
Well, we don't wear four cornered garters either, were it not for the fact that we have to put on tzitzis.
Right. They could wear tzitzis.
Right.
And maybe Rashi's
daughters did. Right. So we'll just address it. There's a lot of things over there. Let's just address one of these things. So I'll just start with the following, which is just interesting. Everybody knows that Rashi's daughters put on tefillah. Right, that's a wide known fact. What's the source for the fact that Rashi's daughters put on tefillin? So the answer is, beats me. I don't think there's any source. This is like one of those urban legends. I always heard this also. Yeah, Rashi's daughters wore tefillin.
When the father was older, they helped the father put on tefillin. Helped Rashi put on tefillin.
Maybe, I don't know. Shaila says, did Rashi's daughters put on Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam? That's the Shaila, right? But as far as I know, there is zero source for that statement whatsoever. Even though it's a statement that I've heard many, many times. Next time somebody says, well, Rashi's daughters put on tefillin, ask them to show you the source, right? So it's just worthwhile. Now, the Gemara does say that Michal Bas Shaul, Shaul's daughter, put on tefillin. That is a Gemara. And there is a difference of opinions in the Gemara whether the Chachamim, you know, Shaul HaMelech.
Yeah, whether she was allowed, you mean?
Right. So in other words, it says in the Gemara that she put on tefillin, and there is a dispute within the Gemara as to whether the Chachamim were okay with that or whether the Chachamim protested against her wearing tefillin. That there is some historical source for, you know, for a prominent woman putting on tefillin. And again, there's some discussion as to where that came from. Perhaps she followed an opinion that says that tefillin are not time-bound. In other words, we assume that tefillin are a time-bound obligation because we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There is an opinion in the Gemara that says that tefillin would apply on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and maybe she was taking that position. So again, you know, yeah, if you put on tefillin on Shabbos, maybe it would apply to women also, but we don't, so it doesn't. But I think it's just worthwhile bringing out that thing about Rashi's daughters. That's, I have no idea where that started, right? But if you talk to people, yeah, Rashi's daughter's put on tefillin. Yeah, where does it say that? You know, so I'm not really sure. I don't think there is a source for that. I think somebody made it up once upon a time.
But for sure, they're garments.
What's that? Right, but you could argue there may be more in the realm of jewelry than garments. I mean, again, talus is a little bit more of a garment. But what's tefillin? You call tefillin a beged? I don't know. It's more like an adornment. I mean, the word totafos, which means the shel rosh, really literally means a piece of jewelry, right? So in other words, these are adornments. So comes the Yonasan ben Uziel and says that these adornments, these kalim that a man would wear, a woman should not be wearing. Again, so, you know, that's just an interesting source. But the what about
the
Devorah? I don't think there's any source for Devorah putting on tefillin, as far as I know.
Yeah,
I don't think so. The continuation of the pasuk is also very interesting in the Yonasan ben Uziel. V'lo yilbash gever simlas isha. Right, the pasuk says that a man should not wear the simla of a woman, which we saw in the Targum Unculus means that she shouldn't wear the adornments of a woman. In other words, not only is it prohibiting wearing a man wearing the clothing of a woman, but he shouldn't wear the makeup of a woman. So the Yonasan ben Uziel takes this a step further. V'lo yisaper givar be'shichye, a man should not shave the hair under his armpits. Ve'eryase, he should not shave the hair of his genitalia, right? So the pubic hairs. Now those two statements are a statement made by the Gemara Nazir that we quoted before. In other words, that simlas isha is not limited to clothing. It's not even limited to adornments. But in other words, it's limited to any bodily preparation that is feminine in nature as opposed to masculine. Basically, the underlying assumption is women shave the hair on those parts of their bodies. Men do not. So if a man were to shave that hair, so he's imitating a woman in that way, and that would be prohibited. You know, the word simla is a very, very broad term, that he shouldn't present himself as a woman, not in terms of what he wears, not in terms of the jewelry that he wears, not in terms of the makeup that he wears, and not even in terms of, you know, the way he prepares the hair on his body. That is brought lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch, and actually Rashi brings it over here as well. Lo yilbash gever simlas isha, right? Rashi brings two interpretations. The second interpretation is shelo yosir sa'ar ha'erva v'seir shel beis hashechi. Again, you shouldn't shave off the pubic hairs, you shouldn't shave off the hair that's under his armpits. Okay, so far the Yonasan ben Uzio is expanding the pasuk, but he's doing so in a way which is consistent with the Gemara and Nazir, and indeed with the you know, the pshat brought in Rashi. But then he adds, yeah.
Will these things change with the times? In other words, more people would be wearing what we consider ladies' pants.
Right.
And
right.
As time passes on, more and more women stop wearing pants. But that should be considered very.
Right. So to address that specific question, let me just make the following disclaimer. For tznius reasons, women should not wear pants. However, the consensus, I think, of poskim today is that women wearing pants is not a violation of beged ish. That's not to say that they should wear pants. Again, there are tznius issues involved in that. But in terms of the specific prohibition of beged ish, first of all, women's pants are made somewhat differently than men's pants. In other words, you know, they're not identical. What's that? Okay, you know, ain't a chinami. But again, once the styles change in that way, I believe the consensus of poskim is that it's not considered to be a beged ish issue. Again, let me just stress again, just nobody should walk away with a misimpression. Right. So Rabbi, you said that you can wear pants. You know, it's a tznius issue, even if it's not a beged ish issue. But where it becomes a nafka mina lemaisa is, you know, let's say a woman wearing pants in the privacy of her home, or in the presence of other women, or under a skirt or a dress. You know, again, a woman's going hiking or something like that, you know, where it would actually be more tsonua for her to have some kind of covering under the dress or the skirt. So, you know, the consensus of poskim is that it's not a beged ish problem, you know, and as long as she could address the tznius issue adequately, so then, you know, the beged ish issue is not a problem. Yeah.
The number of religious women who wear pants also have something else, not just their shirt, but something else that goes down. So, because they don't see the form of the woman, so then the pants are the sense of tznius, but they also go above and beyond the regular religious woman, because they do. The pants go down to the ankles, which is Eid Haredes and the Chazonish. So they're covered up, they're covering over their feet, so they're mehudr.
Okay, yeah. Numerous Rabbanim have noted, I think correctly, that once the idea of wearing skirts and dresses becomes identified as the way a frum woman dresses, it's appropriate, again, even leaving aside these issues of whether it's technically beged ish, not technically not beged ish, technically you get around the tznius issues, but you identify with the community of Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. Look, you can make an argument, you know, it's not 100% clear in halacha that men have to cover their heads walking around all the time. Again, there's a lot of, you know, discussion if one looks in the Svarim about, you know, what the nature of the obligation of a man to cover his head is. But once it's been accepted in the community of Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs that we always cover our heads, so then that's a sign. I mean, you see a guy wearing a yarmulke, that's a sign that he's from, right? So by the same token, if a woman is wearing a dress or a skirt, you know, and that becomes the way of identifying a woman who's part of the community of Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, that alone is a reason to do it, even aside from all of the issues of beged ish and tznius and the like. But let me just, before we dive in Ma'ariv, let me just put the zinger in over here, and you know, we'll put it in there, and then I guess everybody will have to discuss it. So the Yonasan ben Uzziel says, so men shouldn't shave the hair under their armpits, they shouldn't shave their pubic hairs. Those are feminine forms of presenting oneself. Ubeyan poi. And the man shouldn't shave the hair on his face, because if you're clean-shaven, that also is a woman's... women are clean-shaven, men have beards. That's the Yonasan ben Uzziel writes. Lischamo heich nisha. He shouldn't shave all of these hairs on the parts of his body, because if he does so, he's appearing as a female. Because this is something distanced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very interesting, Yonos ben Uziel. I mean, obviously, obviously there are many opinions on the other side that permit going clean shaven as long as one, you know, shaves in a halakhically appropriate way. But I bring it for psak. I'm just bringing it to be aware of the Yonos ben Uziel. He lumps together the concept of not shaving the face, which is not brought by the Gemara in Nazir, together with, you know, not shaving the armpit hairs and the pubic hairs, which actually is brought by the Gemara in Nazir, is brought lahalacha and Shulchan Aruch. He slips in, you know, another additional prohibition in here, which, again, I don't think we generally assume that way lahalacha, but it's interesting to note that he brings it in his explanation of this pasuk.
Sign language. Jew is this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Kasha Omer Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, uh-huh. What's that?
What did he think of the, you know, the mitzvah for not cutting
chaos that was brought up someplace before this
Kasha? Yeah, I'm not sure, I don't know. Why is he saying don't shave? You know, it would imply that you think he's saying shave the whole face.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I don't know.